Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Rugby Bits Part 19, powered by Betkoza. And we are happy to host this this space tonight. We're back in action after a week of just getting our minutes managed and having a bit of rest. And now that the rugby's back on, we've come back on as well. I've got Sean and Cooks with me today, and tonight we'll mainly focus on the two South African URC games that happened this week, the first two United Rugby Championship games in South Africa. And the Sharks were able to beat the Bulls at home 30 points to 16, and the Stormers lost to the Lions 19 points to 37. So two games where the scoreline suggested that the games were not close, but I think that it was a bit tense, and there's quite a few things to talk about. So I've got Cooks and Sean here, and we'll start with the first game, which was the Sharks vs. Bulls game. Cooks, what is your general impression of the game? It seemed like it was quite competitive, but there was a lot of basic errors happening. So is it a case of the teams were a bit rusty from a few weeks off and having to integrate the Springboks into their teams? Is it the legendary Durban humidity that caused a few drop balls? What do you think about Friday's game?
Evening, guys. First of all, it's good to be back. I think we've had a longer break than the Springboks have had. That's what it seems like. But yeah, I thought Friday's game, it didn't start off great. The first half wasn't the most pleasing, but I thought the game opened up slightly in the second half. Unfortunately, it is impossible to catch a ball in Durban between December and March. So, yeah, and you sort of felt it and said, I mean, a few slightly silly errors and obviously trying to get the box back. Those sides haven't played, it seems like, almost over a month, I guess. Yeah, it's been a while since they've played. But I must say it was great to see the Sharks. The Sharks took a completely different side with the box back. And I really do hope that, well, we'll be able to travel again and Omricon allows us for the team to travel, because I do think the Sharks and the Bulls can make a massive run going into the second half of the URC. I think obviously when the Sharks were touring, they were without many of the box, but all in all, I thought the Sharks pack was fantastic on the weekend. I thought, especially in the second half, I thought they really turned the screws on, and you could see the class coming through. I mean, it does help when like some Bonambi comes back and the Thomas Tutoys, the Sia Kulisis. And they still have the likes of Norchard still come back, and the Sharks have got serious depth. I mean, you still add, I mean, look, Ron Pienaar is playing on the week at 9. There's still Nohamba. There's still Hendrickson to come back from injury. There's still Grant Williams. I mean, they've got plenty of nines in the ranks, and it's great to see Lukanyama at 12. I've always believed that he was at 12, especially before he broke through in the Springboks. I thought 12 was, because I think what people tend to forget, as amazing as he is defensively, he's also such a great ball player. I think at 12, I like the fact that he gets his hands on the ball a lot more. But sure, so I thought it was a fantastic win for the Sharks. And whenever you beat the Bulls, it's always a great time when you beat the Bulls. So yeah, I thought the Sharks will be happy with that. And it's a pity, I think, for the Sharks, the worst thing for them is the fact that there's this break now and they can't carry on this momentum.
Yeah, and I think it's quite a big contrast between Friday's game and the other, 30, 40 games that they had against the Bulls in the last calendar year, where the Bulls were just able to dominate them up front and they just got no purchase for their backs. And yeah, just adding is it maybe a case of the additions to the Sharks team of having the Springboks in there, or is it a case of maybe the Bulls losing a big member of their team this week in Trevor Nyakane? And Robert Hunt, I think it was his first start for the Bulls on Friday, and he was being put in the torture chamber by Dutuko Mthunu in the scrums, and even though Mthunu even got a hit on him in general play as well in a tackle. So it seems like there is a bit of a worry of depth for the Bulls in their props and their tight head if they're trying to convert someone like Lizo Kubuka to play tight head now. Sean, maybe I could just bring you in here with regards to talking about the Bulls' props. Will the Bulls be able to make any impact on this competition if they don't have a tight head?
Hi, thank you, and hi everyone. It's so good to be back. I can't believe you're getting me to talk about the front row and didn't give me the pleasure of talking about Lukanya but it's okay. I couldn't beat Cooks at that little roundup. Okay, so this is by far the least strong point of my rugby, is most certainly the front rows, but the short answer is no. They're actually in quite a bit of trouble if they don't kind of pull it out, which I really feel they will though. You see, the thing is losing someone like Chivanyakane, who really adds, like, it almost feels bad to say that he adds a lot of value, because he adds so much value. And the thing is that, I mean, imagine training with a guy that is literally a test star at loose head and tight head. Like, the stuff you can learn, the stuff that the coaches can work with, and the different options you can play around with are immense. And so they've lost that. They've essentially lost two players. Like, I really think that they have. Like, whether you look at it as a loose head and a tight head, or if you look at it as a tight head and a springbok or whatever, they've lost a lot of value there. It was quite a quick little turnaround. With him like signing and leaving and everything, it was obviously the right call for him and for the Bulls. They will recover. I don't think Jake White would have been overruled too much, like if he really, really, really didn't want him to go, or they might have just turned around to him and said, "Listen, like the money that we're going to make out of this, and we just can't afford to not make this decision, because it seems more like a business decision than anything else." So are they just going to need the other guys in the squad to pick up? And one of them, and obviously front and center for all of us, and someone that I was really expecting and hoping to come out of injury a little stronger, was Lizo Kloboka, to really, really kind of front up, because they kind of need that now. They need an experienced, in inverted commas, like a Springboks type of player experience, which Kloboka covers. But they need someone like that can really just anchor down and help them out. But they've got a little while to work on it before they travel. But if they travel and their guys aren't hitting form, they're gonna, or should I say, come the new year, and their front row is not standing up, there's going to be trouble. And that generally means a yellow card for Bismarck, because he doesn't like going backwards. And we saw on Friday what that meant.
Yeah, that was the battle within the battle between the two Bethlehem boys was definitely entertaining, but I don't think Jakob Paper would agree with that. It seems like they were trying to find each other's locations and home addresses, and yeah, it just got a bit too personal there at some stage. But I think it'll be very interesting to see if Kloboka can make that conversion into being a tight head. I think there is some talent that the Bulls can rely on in their loose head position, with someone like Simpiwe Matanzima. So he can probably come in at loose head and do a job. But yeah, I think that 5 million rand that the Bulls got from Racing, they should try to maybe see if they can buy maybe one of the Sharks props, their young props. Maybe that could help boost their side. But just talking about and going back to the Sharks, Cooks, I think you've already talked quite a bit about Lukanya Am and how well he played on Saturday. But were there any other players from the Sharks and from the Bulls that impressed you on Friday night?
I must say, from the Bulls side, I think I really thought David Creel had a tidy game. I've always been a big fan of him, even though he does look like, as small as he is and as thin as he is, he takes quite a bit of a beating at the back, but I really do enjoy him at the back, and I can see why Jack White trusts him. I thought he was pretty solid. I mean, like I said, for the Sharks, obviously Lukanya Am was the standout, but I would say for me the big thing as the Sharks was the pack as a collective. I thought for me, that's where the game is won. Like the biggest thing, like you touched on Natalia, the biggest thing that the Sharks, that is, I mean, they've been getting hidings from the Bulls the last year and a bit. I mean, that's been the real pandemic for the Sharks, has been the Blue Bulls. I mean, I think the last couple of games they've leaked about 40 points and it's looked bad. So for them to finally get a pack, for the pack to front up, I thought it was huge. I thought Thomas Tatoy was very good again. I thought he's been very good. I think he's been it just shows the quality we have in our props at the moment, the Springboks, that he can't get a sustained run. But yeah, I think for the Sharks, I thought Buddha Chamberlain wasn't too bad, but not to hop on negatives, but I do think the Sharks need to sort out that flower situation ASAP, especially now with their run back. It's tough because, I mean, you look at someone like Cohen Bosch, when the Sharks were fully firing and fully, well, had everyone back, was last year Super Rugby, and Cohen Bosch was a form flower then. I mean, since then, it's been tough times for him. So I do think the Sharks need to figure out that 10 situation. But if their pack is firing the way they're firing now, I mean, they could put me at fluff and then at least win 60% of their games. That's how good the pack looked on Saturday. So, yeah, as I say, the pack for me was the big standout. And, obviously, I think Lukanyam is... I think you're getting to the point now where a podcast can't go by without mentioning how amazing he is. But also, in general, just it was great to see Sibongosi back on the field. It's pretty weird to see Apelele Fassie. But, yeah, like I said, I'm not too worried about the Blue Bulls. I do think they'll bounce back. They've got extreme quality. I still think they've got a 70 cap Springbok in Ari Klo when he gets his chance. I'm a big fan of his. So I don't think it's all doom and gloom at the Bulls just yet. Don't think any side, especially with Jake White there, I think they'll still be good. But I'm just glad that the Sharks won, so I don't have to see any more of your tweets, Tyler, about as a happy Blue Bulls fan, at least until the new year.
At least until the new year. But yeah, I think just from the Bulls side, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how they navigate things, because it just shows that, yeah, while South Africa probably has 8 props that can maybe play in international teams and tier one teams, it does get a bit, there is a bit of a drop in quality after that in the options that the domestic teams have. And that's going to be probably telling when we're playing in Northern Hemisphere conditions. But yeah, I think some of the problems that we've had in the tour as well were there for the Bulls, in terms of just, I think ball security actually from both sides was an issue on Friday night. There were a lot of penalties and turnovers from other teams, and it's just something that they have to be aware of for in the future as well. That, you know, when you're playing the teams from, you know, Ireland, Wales, etc., that they'll be very quick to get on the ball. And we saw that in the first 4 URC games that we had. So ball security has to be the one thing that they try to fix. I think my impressive player, except for the ones that were mentioned, was Ruan Ukia. I think he had a fantastic game. Catching the high balls from kickoffs, which has seemed to, from out of nowhere, become a big South African weakness. It seems like all of our South African teams can't catch balls from the kickoffs, apart from Ruan Ukia. So he's catching the balls. He was causing a bit of trouble for Mwanambi in the early lineouts as well. And he just, as always, carries, is quite high in the tackle charts, and he's carrying the ball as well. I think Ruan Ukia is someone that I think him and Salman Murat and probably someone like JD Shikalinga are all fighting for that 5th, 6th choice lock option, or the future of the locks once the likes of Itzebeth and Mostert leave. And I think we're in good stead to have another crop of great locks that succeed them afterwards. And he played a great game. But yeah, I think the Bulls will need to just make sure that they are accurate with their cleaning, that they try to sort out the scrums or try to get some sort of parity there, which will probably need a lot from Koboka as well. And then the backs just never really got much ball, but they looked pretty good. I'm liking the Creoles more and more as I see them play. I think I was negative on them, but now I see their value. And like Cook said, I think David Creel's just a solid pair of hands at the back, and he's able just to get everything ticking, and he also can spot attacking opportunities as well. And you know, it would have been great if we saw more Cornel Hendricks, but we'll Yeah, it just wasn't a game for him. Sean, do you have any other thoughts about other players from Friday?
Yeah, I echo what you guys are saying about the Creels. They're pretty impressive, and they do seem to be sort of maintaining things quite well and growing week on week, which is quite nice. But the guy that I wanted to highlight was, it would be wrong if I couldn't say Ruan Pienaar, because I think he really adds a lot of value there. And I think he's helping. I know Cooks mentioned that the Sharks need to sort out their 10 issue, and I really feel that probably the main reason why he starts so much is because of that. I think he adds a lot of value there. But Pepsi Buthelezi is the man for me, and I think he's the one. I've been impressed with him and everything, but I think the more time we get him, we can get him playing with Sio Kolisi, the better. And I think that was cool. He was quite sort of involved on Friday, but yeah, that's really it.
Yeah, not to be like Andy Capistrano and confuse Buthelezi and Kolisi constantly, but I can see why he was confusing him, because there was a lot of a younger, maybe leaner Sio Kolisi in Buthelezi's game on Friday. Carrying the ball strongly, getting around, hitting every ruck, making tackles as well. And apart from the part where he's trying to chase down Arno Boerter to start a fight, I think he played a really good game on Friday. It will be interesting, though, who they pair up, who's the third loose trio, loose forward that the Sharks choose when they have those two available. Because, yeah, I'm not sure about Labus Kagni. I don't know if he's the sort of blindside flank that will be of quality there. And the Sharks just seem to have a lot of sort of hybrid flanks, those sort of like almost Sam Underhill big flanks that can get in the ground, but not necessarily the, and I think we've been saying this for a long time, and I know I've seen Dando's also on this space, just decrying the fact that we don't have Tyler Paul in the Sharks team. I think that's still been their biggest loss. Cooks, I see your hand.
Yeah, I was thinking with the Sharks losses, I think we also forget that Norche is still going to come back from injury. I mean, I think if he comes back, he takes over that 8 jersey. And I think, Norche, Buthelezi and Sia is such a dynamic loose trio. I think in terms of what the Sharks can offer, obviously you might lose something a little bit off the ground, but if you look at, I can sort of see a situation where the Sharks almost attack the breakdown like the box do when the box in the World Cup on the fully strength, where you sort of have the likes of, you know, Bongi chipping in, the sort of Thomas Tutoi chipping on the ground, and almost getting hybrid players where instead of having one out and out fetcher, you sort of have everyone's chipping in with turnovers there. But I do think that you can get. I do think that if you can have, sorry, my voice is disappearing on me here. I do think if you can have Sia, Pepsi, and Norch as a loose trio, man, I think that would be fantastic to watch. I think it would be great with ball in hand and the amount of work that, especially with Buthelezi, gets through a ton of work. And I think his game is only going to improve playing with two Springboks in Norche and Sia.
Yeah, and I think just the last personnel punt for the Sharks is Bilo Gumede. I think he's also a massive prospect there for their blindside flank. Might not necessarily be the 2 meter tall type of blindside flank that we produce in South Africa, but I think he does all the things that you want from your blindside flank, of like just doing the dirty work and getting that sorted while being quite destructive himself as a ball carrier and tackler as well. So if you have those four, you add both Henko and James Venter as options. Of course, the Scotland international now, Dylan Richardson is also an option there. The Sharks have a lot of depth. It's just now how they configure that loose trio combination, kind of similar to the All Blacks, where you know you have Ardy, Savi, and Sam Kane, and they're kind of similar players with like different strengths, though, and you have to find that third wheel to get that combination going. So yeah, the Sharks have just put themselves into a good position for the rest of the competition. The Bulls are lagging a little bit behind, and they're, I think, second from last on the log. So that is a bit of a worry if they're going to challenge for playoff spots later. And just want to remind, ladies and gentlemen, that if you'd like to join the conversation. If you'd like to, excuse me, now my voice is going. If you'd like to comment, please just request to speak at any time. Yeah, we'd love to hear your thoughts and your views from that as well. I think we're getting Rolani just to connect now, but I think let's just move to first thoughts about the Lions Stormers game, and then I'll switch over to Rolani once he's connected. Sean, Lions versus Stormers, great win from the Lions actually, and it does seem like that new coaching staff around Ivan van Rooyen, they're getting something right with that team.
Yeah, I know. Like Cash has taken quite a bit of heat since his appointment, and I mean he's been like obviously been working and learning and adjusting a few goodies, but he seems to have got the balance of his coaching setup right. And if anything, on Saturday, I think hats off to Cash and the coaching staff for how they undid the Stormers. I thought they were really effective at what they did and how they went about it. And they really did look in control. Like the Stormers were in the mix and they were there. And it was almost like the Stormers were basically on a seesaw. Like you didn't really know which way the seesaw was going to fall. Like they had moments where they were going to get back in the game and you thought, okay, cool. They're going to actually dig their heels in and sort it out. And it just never came for them. And the Lions always looked like they were on an upward trajectory. Even though there were times when the Stormers looked like they might take control, the Lions just trucked through. They just kept going and going and going. And, I mean, I thought, obviously, Vincent Sachuka, was incredible. And Berger Undahl as well. And, like, the guys were just really, like really cooking. I think Fred Zeilinger had a pretty decent game. He made a couple of errors with his kicks. But I thought, he was quiet on the day in terms of standing out. He just really did his job, and really let the other people around him play, which is sometimes what you want from your 10, you know. And I just thought it was really good. I mean, Dobbo came out and said that was probably the worst he's ever seen the Stormers play, and they just didn't really get it going. And the results, you know, really like reinforces that.
Yeah, I think let's shift focus. We'll shift focus, I think, after this to just the Stormers and what's going on there, because I think after a decent start, they just fell off that game so quickly. But Rolani, I think, yeah, you're connected now. We'd like to hear what your thoughts or your question is.
Hi, everyone. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, we can.
Got you.
Awesome, awesome. I think for me, personally, from the Stormers game, I think it's just an issue of team chemistry. Because, I mean, you have all these superstars all in they're seasoned veterans. When you look at Ruan Nel, you look at Wadikalan, Senatla, and company. But I think you just need that one player who can gel them together, you know. This is the times where I miss someone like, I know people are going to kill him, but I feel like Damian Willems is needed in such a team, you know, to link the backs and the forwards. Because right now, it seems like they're playing two different games, you know. And then just one positive note I saw is that I think that Wadikalan is going under the radar too much, because the way that there were two tries that were scored, I think two quick tries scored by the Stormers, and he was such an influential player in that. I think that he goes under the radar so much, and we need to remember that he is actually a Springbok. You know, he was actually second choice Springbok, second choice fullback for a certain time before he got injured, and then he fell down the ranks. But I think for the Stormers, I think it's just the issue of you need that one player, because it's the same thing I saw with the Bulls, right? I see you were mentioning things like Trevor Nyakani leaving and trying to put who's this Lizzo Kowoka on tight end. But I think we forget that the Bulls started like the cusp, like when they started peaked, is when they had Customs, I mean, Dwayne Vermaelen playing. And I think the influence of Dwayne Vermaelen and that locker room really, it gets very prevalent, that you can see that there is no Dwayne Vermaelen. You know, like the calmness that he generates, the sense of belief in yourself that, you know what, I'm in a team with Dwayne Vermeulen, so I'm pretty sure I'm very good because I'm in a team with Dwayne Vermeulen. That loss of Dwayne Vermeulen is so significant. I think that is the most significant loss for the Bulls. And just with regards to just one more, switching someone like Zico Walker to tight head so soon, I don't think it's fair on him per se. But this is my personal opinion. But remember, we need to remember that one of the most technical positions in the forward is a prop. Like switching from loose head to tight head is no joke. That's why before Trevor, I don't think I've seen someone who plays them seamlessly like that. You know. And now you're putting pressure on Zico Walker, telling him that you have to be able to play two prop positions at the same time. I think it's very, very critical and very demanding of someone who's from an injury, right? Remember, he's from an injury, and with an injury, you lose a sense of confidence somewhat, right? Remember, Trevor Nyakane was at the peak of his confidence, his peak of his abilities. That's why he could transition so easily. But for someone like Kowaka, I think Kowaka needs to get at least 10 games in. Or even, I'm even scared to even say 10 games. I mean, you have to ask the player if he's comfortable or not to switch. You know, you can switch a lock to a flank to an eighth man, a center to a wing. But switching a prop, tight end prop to a luther prop is a completely new dimension. And I think it's just, we're asking too much from him. Maybe it's because of the standard that we have as a Springbok now that we need to have a dynamic prop in our team. That now that you put in the challenge upon him, saying that if you think that you want to be in the Springbok setup somehow, you have to be a dynamic prop. So I don't know what goes on in the locker room, but I think that is very critical and that's very intense, very demanding on someone who just came back to the fray. Well done to the Lions. I mean, I've been supporting the Lions through thick and thin. I'm glad that Cash from Rain is doing something there. I'm so glad that Chichuga was like immense. I'm glad that someone like Wardendal he's like an honest player. I mean, you know what he's gonna do. He's like a Damien Delaney. You know he's gonna crash it up. He's not gonna do anything fancy. He's gonna hit it up for you, and you just have to be there to support him. But I think from a standpoint of the tournament, the rugby championship, I think that with our Springboks in the mix, I think we're gonna start raising a lot of eyebrows. So the Bulls, I think it's just that Dwayne Vermeulen is gone, but they'll come around. The Sharks still have Oxenche, they still have Apile Lefasi, they still have a wealth of players to come from. And I think this can only bode well for our upcoming players like Nuhamba and company. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much. There's a couple things that I'm going to touch on. The first one was Kowaka. Like, I do tend to agree with you in terms of how they're trying to move him and where he's trying to find his form. I mean, if we all think about it, before the 2019 World Cup, he was literally in the running to go into the World Cup. And it was just literally, it was between him and the Beast, it almost felt like at some stages, and then sometimes it was between him and Kitsoff. And yeah, but what I will say with regards to them moving guys in the front row, I don't think it's a case of now you have to fill in this position and go ahead and do it. You know, I think they obviously feel that he has the capabilities and the strength and the ability to do it, but it does take time. And with regards to Nyakane and his move and how he handled it, like, I don't think we will ever see something like that again. It is that difficult. And I agree totally. I spoke to a couple of guys about it just to try and understand it more. And they said it just, you just don't do it. Like, you can't. So Nyakane did it, and now we're trying to get someone else to do it. So we'll see. And obviously Thomas Tatoy is also been moved around a little bit. And Kuni Oosthuizen, but yeah, those were injury-based things. Just on the Stormers side.
Sean, can I just add very quickly that I think apart from Monre Smith in the Bulls squad, there's not really that many recognizable tight end props. You know, they do have Gerard Steenkamp that played and Matanzima and Jacques van Rooyen as loose end options, but I think this is almost a move of necessity as well.
Yes, that's a very good point. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Carry on.
That was all I was going to say. It's just a great point.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. So maybe, I mean, you're right. I completely didn't even think about that properly. But yeah, it is possibly something that he can get away with, and we'll just have to get away with it now while he learns, kind of thing. The other thing on the Stormers side of things, and I'm going to agree and I'm going to disagree with you on two things, on one thing, should I say. But I don't think Damian Willemse is necessarily the glue that they're looking for. I would love to see him there. I'm not saying that he shouldn't be there. I just don't think that he's necessarily that guy. I think he's still too much fighting for himself at the moment, and playing his game, and he's still working between 10 and 15. So I don't necessarily think he would be the glue. I want him to play and start. So don't get me wrong there. But in terms of a player to glue them together, I just don't think that he's that guy. What I will say about Gallant is I've seen a lot of guys been talking about him recently and whatever. And so I don't think he's flying under the radar. I think it's quite evident his involvement on attack, especially. And I think what does happen and what we must remember is Gallant is one of those players, and you can look at it as a fortunate or an unfortunate space. I think mostly it looked at as an unfortunate space. But he takes a lot longer to regain form after injury. So I don't think it's an ability thing. I just think it's like one of those things. Like some guys come back from injury, you can put them straight into the Springbok setup. They haven't played for yonks, and then they go and they put in a man of the match performance. And Gallant doesn't work like that. Like he's very much like a baby steps kind of a guy where you've just got to do the little things, and then it all starts coming together. And the thing is he gains momentum week in and week out, and that's what's key. So I think it's very important that he stays fit, because I think we will see now that he will start growing almost exponentially, like getting better and getting into that Springbok setup. Get it back into that Springbok form again. I really think that he is 100% in the mix and in conversations when it comes to being a Springbok player. And that's just going to pose another issue for guys moving for selection moving forward, because it's who do you miss out, and at the moment it probably looks like Fassi would miss out if we bring Gallant back in, or does Willemse go take a 10 position and then, or Steyn miss out maybe, I don't know, but that's a conversation for another day. But yeah, that was great input there. Thank you.
Thanks, and thanks, Rolani, for that question as well. Cooks, I think let's just continue that conversation on the Stormers, and I think maybe a solution has been suggested now. But yeah, I think there was a big problem in the inside backs on Saturday between Lebok, Duplessis, sorry, now I've completely blanked on the 13, but they just weren't coming together as a combination. And it seemed like any time the ball went to Duplessis or Ricus Pretorius or Juan Nel, it just nothing was happening for the Stormers. But it was only when Gallant had the ball or he could put Sanatla into space that things were happening. Yeah, and I think we've talked about Damian Willemse saying he could maybe fit in at 10 or 12 apart from that. But yeah, what does John Dobson do to try and get that backline going?
Well, I think the first thing John Dobson has to do is go and find Dan Duplessis' high school coach and ask him what did he get right to get the best out of him. I mean, it feels like the last time we've seen him play well was when he was in high school, and it's. I mean, they've tried him at they've tried him at 12 and at 13, and he seemed to have struggled. And it's been a problem, and the center position has been a problem for the Stormers for a while. You know, I mean, I know Ruan now had a run there, had a bit of a run at 13, then they shifted him to the wing. So, he pretty much, I don't think they've solved that center position since Jean de Jong left traditionally and Jean de Villiers retired. So, they've been looking for an inside, a center combination that works. So, and I think in the Bok, it's tough. You know, I do think his best position is 10, but unfortunately, like it just hasn't been clicking at the moment. I think even if it goes down to the scrum offs, I think obviously Angros, they've got him there to try and solve that issue. But I mean, they've been struggling in the nine position, struggling at, obviously, Hoshi Yankees also hasn't been at his best. So, I mean, 9, 10, 12, 13 has been a position of concern for the Stormers for a while. I do think that Vilimsa could possibly be the answer at 12, but then again, we're back in the situation with Vilimsa is, where is his best position? Like, where do we think is his best position going to be? Are we going to give an extended run at 10? Are we going to give him an extended run at 12? I mean, at least at 10, you know, Cade Volator comes back next year from his injury, so he could slot back in there. And then, yeah, because like you said, at the moment, it does kind of seem like it's Galant and Hope, and hopefully he can spark some magic. But it's tough to watch, especially in Dan Duplessis. I've always been a big fan of his game. I do think that those are the sort of sailors we do need in South African rugby, not just the bashers, but unfortunately he struggled a little bit. And I do hope that he does get some form soon. Otherwise, yeah, John Dobson's going to have to either I would say break the bank and go find players. But unfortunately, the way the money's dried up there, that makes it almost impossible. So yeah, so I do think it's tough times in centres for province and for Stormers.
Just quickly, something that I want to say, and I think that Vilimsa at 12 calls is actually probably a good one. But we're talking about the glue that the Stormers are missing. Juan de Jong's that I just couldn't quite put my finger on it, and I knew that there was someone in the mix, and I was probably running more through 12 through tens. But I think Juan de Jong is probably the guy that you want to look at, because he can obviously cover 12 and 13, but he provides a lot of stability. So you put him at 12, and then he can help Lubbock or possibly even a Sweel at 10, and then Ruan Null. I think Ruan Null is great at 13. He's also been, I think he's been struggling because he's probably missing a decent sort of 12 at the moment. But I think Juan de Jong is the glue, is what I wanted to do, what I wanted to say. I think he's possibly the answer to help them at the moment.
Yeah, and it'll be just we've been saying this probably with the Stormers for the last decade, but it'll be a bit of a waste to have that amazing, quite a great the forwards are quite good, you know, having someone like Nietling Foshier and Evan Rose, they're all playing well. Someone would like to, I think, had a great game, but it just stops at the number 10. And it was quite interesting that the time in the game when they were dominating, they were playing off 9 a lot, and Ungra was just really playing well, just getting those short passes to forwards running on, you know, the switch passes, the Gregans and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, Stefan as a bit of a bigger scrum off, he can sort of play around those fringes. And I don't know why they went away from that game plan. They started trying to go to the backs, and then things started to fall apart there. So maybe they'll have to keep it within the 8 or 9 people, and then only when Khaled wants to step in, he can step in when he wants. But we have Lwande who'd like to say something. Go for it. Oh, it seems like that Lwande's mic might not be working. That's quite unfortunate. But I think let's take this opportunity just to go back to some impressive performers. So I think we've mentioned a few names. Sean, is there any other, like, I think we've mentioned a bit about Vincent Chutuka. He played quite well. I think we also talked about Birgit Orndendahl. Are there any other players you'd like to highlight for their performance on Saturday?
Yeah, I think someone who kind of had a little bit of a quiet game, but I had a look at a few clips and some extended highlights of it, and I thought Similani was actually, for the little bit that he had to do in the game, I really thought that he did well for what he had, and I was super impressed with it. I think basically, like, I know I'm highlighting mostly the backs, but I really thought Zelinger and Orndendahl had great games. But I think between Vincent Chutuka and Orndendahl, those two could comfortably take man of the match on Saturday without a doubt. I thought they were freaking incredible, and Chutuka's, like, his skills and his handling is flippin' brilliant. The other person that I actually wanted to highlight, and I forget him now, I think it was the Stormers prop. I forget his name.
Nietling Foshier.
Oh, That I could not believe the skills that that man had. I mean, he basically, he was an assist on two tries, but he really, like, he was stepping, he was moving, he was at 10 at one stage and shifted the ball on nicely to Lubbock. Couple of nice offloads and stuff. His skills really surprised me. Like, I thought he really had a good game, ironically, on the losing end.
What about him playing 12 for the Stormers?
Yeah, listen, I don't think he's got the experience at 12 in the glue, but put him at 15. The guy can hit the line hard.
That's perfect. I think Dobber will take notes on that one. Quicks, on the Stormers side, are there any players that you'd like to highlight?
Oh, it is tough. I think, like I said, like Sean stole my thunder with Nedlik Vashir. I thought he's been good for a while for the Stormers. I think he's a very good player. I've always enjoyed him. Like you said, his skill set is incredible. I love seeing forwards with great skill set. It's something that we don't see enough of, you know, especially here in the country. But I think the Stormers are the Stormers. I mean, being a Stormers fan must hurt. I don't know, like. It must be the most frustrating thing where it's always there's players there, but it always feels like there's something a little bit missing. So, yeah, I mean, I'll just, like I said, Nedling for sure is probably my standout as well. And then, yeah, like I said, if you look at the Lions, well, Tyler, you obviously went above board and saying that you'd prefer Berg Wendell over Andre Estes, and then you sort of left me in the lurch there because we know we're both on the GOAT camp. And I was like, but I don't know if I can vouch for that now. So,
I'm going to distance myself from you guys. When Tyler sent that tweet on Saturday, I was like, how can I delete someone else's stuff? That was a shocker.
Eh? The worry for me, Sean, is I wasn't get dragged into it. They're like, isn't this a guy that you're on the feral camp on? So I was like, now Tyler, what are you doing here? What are you doing to me?
We still got to actually reignite that Farrell and Wilkinson. That could be next week's shitstorm, excuse my language.
I was just trying to ignite some content, guys. I just wanted to see what the people think. And I think there's some people that disagree, but I know silently there's people that totally see what I'm seeing with Berger, Wood, and Dahl.
But do you know you saying that to ignite content is basically the exact same as me tweeting that Ruan Pina should be in the Springbok setup? Tell me I'm wrong.
No, pretty much. No, but in all seriousness, Wendell was great on Saturday. And, you know, I think it's just, I think he's playing a lot better with, I think Simulani is bringing a part of his game out, and Wendell is bringing a part of Simulani's game out. And that combination is really playing well together. And, you know, I'm not the biggest Wendell fan before, like, this year. But I'm just seeing that, you know, he's able to carry up and bring the ball up, and he's able to, you know, involve Simulani in the game, and he's playing quite well. Now, I'll take it back. I don't think he's better than Andre Estesen or anything like that. But he definitely played really well. And, you know, it's just another person that the Lions can build on. And look, the Lions right now are South Africa's best team in the URC. So it's having someone like Odendahl as their center and as their leader, like it shows how good that team is. Cooks?
Yeah, but I think I must add, I think I've probably been, after Tyler, been on the attack of Young Money, Cash Money. So I must give him credit after getting... I do think he was able to get a great performance out of the Lions, and getting the right coaches in. I think Jacques Fouris deserves a special mention as defense coach. I thought the Lions defended very, very well on Saturday, and that was a big change in the way they've played. And I think, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what it's still a young side. I mean, it's like an exciting side. There's lots of talent there. I mean, so it's going to be really exciting to see what they do build from there. But also, you know, in South Africa, I mean, even if you look at, you know, Super Rugby, some of our sides do tend to start off really slow, especially after a break. It's always been something that we've struggled a little bit with. So, like I said, I'm just, it's really unfortunate that there's no games next week to see how these sides build on, because now when we play again at the end of Jan, it's back to square one. So I'm sure the Lions also, just like the Sharks, we're really hoping that they would have a game this weekend.
Yeah, that's quite true. And just another player just to highlight is Frankie Horn, who probably was quite close to being also man of the match in that game. He made the most tackles. I think he made over 20 tackles actually in this weekend's game and got himself a brace as well. I think he's, you know, it's. I don't think it's much of a coincidence, you know, who he's followed as an eighth man in the line setup with Warren Whiteley. You know, he does. I don't think he plays exactly like him, but you can see sort of the hardworking aspects of his game and him just being, you know, making every tackle and being at every ruck is the sort of player that he is. And he makes those impacts by just being as close to the ball as possible. He's just such a good player, just making sure that he's where the action is. And that's why he gets, you know, his fair share of tries as well. So I think, yeah, that's a very dangerous loose trio when you have Jakob Kriel there at six as well. And Kriel, I think, had probably his best game since he's come back to the Lions as well. So there's a lot of players in the Lions that I think are starting to rise up to the occasion. That's probably, you know, including Fred Zeilinger, probably having his best game. I think even professional rugby on Saturday, I can't think of a better game that he's had. And yeah, so those sorts of players are standing up and, you know, there's something there in the Lions. Maybe, you know, obviously injuries will decimate that team if they come, but if they can keep the sort of the same 23, 26 players throughout the season, you know, it wouldn't be too much of a surprise to see them near the top of the South African standings. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, if you're top of the standings in your sort of mini conference, that means that you get into the knockouts. So, you know, if the Bulls don't sort of get their things together, if the Sharks remain a bit inconsistent without their Springboks, you know, there's an opportunity there for the Lions. And then just the other, or just to raise that quickly as well, is I think, excuse me, I think we need to also just help Willem Alberts realize that it's not the 2010 tackling laws, it's the 2020 tackling laws. So any contact with the shoulder or head, that's a yellow card, bro. And we can't have that anymore. I think, yeah, he was maybe a little bit lucky because that could have easily sort of been escalated to a red. Salman Murat also was very lucky with his yellow card. That easily could have been a red as well. But yeah, I think apart from that and getting maybe Willem Alberts the updated law book, I think the Lions are in good stead, and I have to maybe retire my slander on Cash Money for a while. So that's a fortunate thing as well. So let's move on and just round up with this this talking point that's come up in the last week. So it seems that there's been some conversation about SAF is abroad, or the South Africans playing in foreign leagues. There was an article by Ian McGeeken just looking at the Springboks and him saying that the Springboks, or having a lot of the Springboks being overseas-based players, might be a weakness for them going forward, just in terms of just not having everyone in the same country to prepare for games and to prepare for like rugby championship campaigns and such. But he also just said over the weekend, he had another article where he said like it's probably a great strength for 2023. So I guess there is now a question about, you know, we're in a new competition. There's, you know, the majority of the players that are in the Springboks squad are found in other leagues and not, or in other teams in other leagues and not in our local URC teams. So I think I'll ask Sean, you know, what are the benefits for, you know, having these players all over the world for the Springboks? And then I'll ask Cooks about how does it hurt our local game? So Sean, you can go first about the benefits for the Springboks.
Yeah, I think that the way that it's been currently run and the things that have been put in place now where we're embracing it, and we are keeping the channels of communication open. We've got guys overseas that are keeping an eye on the players, communicating and just, you know, just sort of in the terms of clarity and whatever, I think is an absolute bonus for us. If you look at historically how South Africans have thought about European leagues in the past versus what they think of European leagues now, is because we weren't that much aware of it. We thought a player like Percy Montgomery went overseas and played in Wales, and we didn't hear from him anymore, and that was it. You mention a player who's playing in Japan, and the guys are like, oh shit, I thought he retired. You know, so now we're just being a little bit more aware of it because we've opened our sort of, in inverted commas, our capturing borders for the Springboks, in terms of that we are taking people from there. So we're now very much aware of what's going on. But I think also, like, not even just Europe, but Japan, I was very skeptical about Japan. I was very, very worried about like how much game time the guys are getting, what's the quality. I thought the game time was a good thing in a way, and I thought the quality wasn't. So I was proven wrong there because, it's both seems to be doing well. The guys are coming back pretty sharp. They're looking good. They're looking rested. I read an article from one of the Kiwis, and he said that it basically extended his career by 2 years. So, that kind of stuff is good. Then if you look at guys like that are playing, because we have Springboks, we have South African players and Springboks that are playing in the absolute like top 10% of sides, you know. So the guys are playing in France week in and week out, or they're going to be playing in France for the Champions Cup. You know, they're getting used to it. It's not, even if like hypothetically a guy like Tyron Green gets called up into the Springbok mix, it's not that bad for him if we're playing in Europe, you know, because he's familiar with everything. So it's not that much of like a starstruck, wide-eyed moment as what it used to be. So I think it's a good thing. And I think it all settles down on how it is managed and how the players are communicated with and how that is brought about. And from what I can see and what we judge by what's happening, is it's pretty clear that the communication is there. And as long as we hold that and we keep a focus on that, which I believe we are, is key for the players to stay motivated, for the players to know what they need to work on, work with the coaching setups in their clubs, and like find out and work on relationships that way. The only detriment is obviously, for me personally, what I feel is the downside is what Kutle is going to talk about. But other than that, the players being there now, I don't think is a bad thing at all.
Sure, Cooks, let's look at it from the perspective of the local teams. And I think you can see certain positions where there's probably a bit of depth worries for South African teams. I mean, you know, having someone like Brock Harris and Lawrence Adrianza playing, you know, serious minutes for the URC teams is probably not the best position for South African teams to be in right now.
I think mine is a two-sided point. I think that the two disadvantages, one is, I think, as a South Africans, the people who don't watch as much European rugby, we've got to realize now that the best rugby tournaments is no longer in the Southern Hemisphere. The best leagues in the world are in England, or Sean would say the French D2, the top 14, then URC. Those are the standards in terms of the best club domestic tournaments at the moment. And unfortunately, we're living in such a time where Super Rugby was the standout competition, you know, and you could see it in the quality of play and things like that. But unfortunately, at the moment, that is gone. And I do find ourselves, I find ourselves in a similar situation where domestically where Australia is, but just that we have more talent to pick from. Whereas our domestic tournaments right now is very young. A lot of youngsters are coming through. So with that, there will be a slight drop in standards of the rugby that's being played. I think the thing that's hurt us the most is the pandemic, because what's happened is we've had our players playing against each other pretty much for over a year. So you've seen the Sharks and the Bulls play each other at least about 4 or 5 times in the space. And the biggest thing that we needed for our youngsters, for them to grow, is to play against international opposition, which is what the URC will provide. But unfortunately, again, with this pandemic, it stunted that. And I do think that for our youngsters, in order for our rugby to grow again. We are the best side in the world internationally, but I do think that if we don't get our domestic sides playing regularly in the URC, playing against having the likes of, the Cohen Bosch is going up against Johnny Sexton, going up against Munster, going up against Benetton. That's where we get better. And unfortunately, what's happened is because also for obviously the rand and the pound and all of that, because players now, they play here and they leave. As much as the Exodus does help, we are unearthing really good youngsters. The Evan Roosters are coming through, the Ulrich Lowe's. But if we don't get them playing against proper position, instead of us playing, instead of watching 5 Curry Cups in 1 year, I worry that once the box sort of like the Sia Colise and those guys, they sort of fall away, the guys we're picking next. And I do think that's why we haven't seen someone like Evan Roos playing for the Springboks, because I do think maybe their concern is going, as well as he's playing here against Evan Roos, playing against the Sharks and the Lions, how do we know we can translate that into the Springboks? How do we know we can translate that into a high international level where it's almost easier to pick someone like a Jasper Visser, because he's arguably playing the best league in the world week in, week out, playing against quality position, playing against internationals. And that's my biggest worry at the moment. I think that if we just need our youngsters getting game time. That's and against proper quality opposition. And I think, but in saying that, I think we're in a better position than Australia and the All Blacks are, because at the end of the day, the All Blacks will find themselves playing. I mean, the Crusaders are going to win most of their games next year in the Super Rugby. The Union side should be all 4 in the semifinals, bar the Reds. So what growing are they going to get beating up the Australian sides and the Fijian sides year in, year out? Where I do think that once we get the URC running up and proper in a couple of years' time, we'll continue being the standard bearers of rugby in terms of our youngsters playing. Because imagine having a situation where our youngsters are playing against Munster, whereas our experienced players are playing in the top leagues in the world, especially if we can get our sides in the European Cup. But now, unfortunately, if we're not getting the game time we need and playing 64 Curry Cups in 1 year, we might be going backwards.
Yeah, thanks so much, gents. I think those are really good points, I think, on both sides. And I think it's, like anything else in life or in rugby, it's always complex. Like, I think it's good, obviously, for the players themselves to get that experience. And I think just linking up with other world-class players will obviously make you a better world-class player as well. I mean, I think the best recent example was someone like Willie LaRue just sort of getting revitalized playing for Wasps a few years ago. And that Wasps team was so amazing. And someone was just sharing an image of that team from that week, from a few years ago. And it was just such an exciting team that played brilliant rugby together. But on the other hand, I think there is while youngsters are getting exposed, you also don't want them to get beaten 80-0 by Leinster and Munster and all that sort of stuff every week. So it's a balance that has to be managed as well to have hopefully, enough returning, experienced players like the Ruan Pinars and the Mornay Steyns of the world that can sort of help guide and counsel the youngsters. You know, you don't want to be where the Waratahs are right now, or where they were in this past season, where you're just playing with kids and you're getting beaten 17-0 and, there's not really much growth or learning that you're getting from that. And hopefully it's just not, we don't just become a shop window for other European or Japanese teams just to see our talent in the URC and then just take them before they can actually start, playing close to their best rugby and helping the team and helping sort of the next wave of players to come through as well. So it's a balance. And I think the other thing is just looking at how the domestic rugby will be structured from now on and, trying to fit in, local competitions with our participation in the URC. So we now have, a Curry Cup in January, which will be quite weird, I think, to get used to. But, how do we see the Curry Cup going forward in future? And, how do we see, the participation of other teams? Are they going to be seen as, almost like, the teams that are used to be in the first division of the Curry Cup, would they be seen more as almost semi-pro teams? Or they have to be semi-pro teams because we can't pay all these rugby players. And there's still probably another group of 30-odd rugby players from teams like the Cheetahs that are probably good enough to be professional rugby players, and finding ways to involve them in the rugby landscape as well. And, you know, I think the Cheetahs are still trying to find a place to play rugby, either in Spain or in other places in Europe. And now it's just trying to find sort of solutions and building a season around that. So there is appropriate levels for appropriate level or groups of players, that we're not just fielding, you know, 20, 21-year-olds playing in these competitions and they're getting beaten up every week. So I think there is some nuances to this, and we'll just have to find a way to do it. But it's going to be like how football is with you know, your best players playing in Europe. So it's just now about making the local league, and that's probably where the PSL has probably been faltering in the last few years, in the football context, is making the local league sustainable to keep producing good players and for them to be relatively competitive when they face the best of the best as well. I see that Graham and Rolani have want to come in as speakers. So I'll just start with Graham.
Hello, guys. Great show as always. Good to hear the familiar South African voices. Yeah, great show. So just a quick thing on this discussion. I think Sean, summed it up very, very nicely, especially on the positives. I can only see positives. I think the challenge that you've got locally within the South African space, and I've kind of banged this drum quite hard, is that it's the coaches and conditioning where the problems are within SA rugby. It's not the, and Tyler, you hit the nail there. We've got plenty, and I think Cooks did as well. We've got plenty of quality with regards to the players. So it's about these coaches so stepping up to the plate during this URC. So when you look at the players that have come up here, and it started a while back, like you say, Percy Montgomery. It's taken on other forms in terms of guys like Jasper Visser, guys like Andre Esterhays and Tyron Greens. These are just a few of the guys who have improved their rugby up north. And I think that's vital, that we need to kind of look, or South Africa needs to look internally at some of the coaching and conditioning. You know, you kind of that's where the gap lies, in my opinion, because the fact of the matter is that, you know, the pound and the euro, it's just too strong for the rand, and then obviously what's going to happen in the URC, and it's definitely going to happen, is that once they find a good youngster playing for the Sharks, you know, he's not going to stay at the Sharks. He's going to, you know, the Dragons are going to pick him up. You know, the Munster's going to pick him up. You know, so this is a thing. It's a shop window for these players as well. But the good thing about it is that we are gaining more and more experience with our players at the highest level. So, like Sean said earlier, we've got guys like Tyron Green, who at Welford Road yesterday, let me tell you, was exceptional. I mean, like some of you know, I was at the game there yesterday, and those conditions were not easy. It was greasy, it was swirling, it was raining. And I promise you, he outplayed Freddie Stewart yesterday, and Freddie Stewart's the new greatest thing since sliced bread in the UK. So Tyron Green is that perfect kind of example. You got a guy like Andre Esterhays, and like I say, he is a shoe-in for when if Lukanu or more so Damien goes down injured. But that's the thing. I think we've got to, as South Africans, accept the fact that this is going to be part of it, that Rand isn't getting any stronger at the moment, and therefore it's going to be a constant threat to the game, the local game. And it's a breeding ground in terms of getting the best out of these young players, trying to get a couple of the experienced guys. So guys like, for example, and I heard a little bit earlier, like guys talk about Ruan Pienaar, Mornay Steyn and Bismarck, they've all gone back, Frans Steyn even, have gone back and added a lot more value to the game. And maybe that's where the South African game is. But I still think it goes back to that whole coaching. You know, when you look at the Bulls, 1 from 5, you know, Jake White supposedly, I don't know, the top 3 coaches in South Africa. Well, is he? You know, you've got to ask that kind of question, and you know, he probably is, but if something's not right there at the moment, and the guys with the, you know, the Lions, and whilst yeah, they've won a couple of games now, the fact of the matter is that you want guys like John Dobson, and I think it's Everett, you know, they've got to lift their games and start competing with these top coaches who are coming in from abroad. You know, the guys like the Pat Lambs, who are obviously at the moment they're struggling a little bit at Bristol, but guys like, you know, you've got guys, you know, Nick Evans and all these international coaches that are coming in and doing a good job. So that's a long-winded way about chatting about it, but I think we need to look internally as South Africans and try and fix the coaching to keep getting the players going in the right direction and getting those results.
Cooks, you want to have a go at just responding to that quickly?
Yeah, Graham, I think you are spot on there, especially about the coaching. I think you look at, unfortunately, the difference now in terms of, like, I mean, like the Rob Baxters and the likes of like Stuart Lancaster at Leinster and Johan van Kroon, for example, at Munster. Some coaches that have, like, the level of coaching is happening in those divisions, and you can see a big change in the coaching, and you can look at the sides and you can see how the coaches have gotten better over the years, and thus you can see the rugby's improving, the leagues have improved, and the players that go, they improve. I mean, someone like a Faf de Klerk is a prime example. When he left the Lions, to the player he is now, and that comes down to coaching, and you sort of hope that the youngsters we keep in here, because in South Africa, talent will never be an issue. I genuinely don't. The way our school system is set up, the way you can kick a bush and at least 5 test quality flanks come out the window. So we'll come out that bush. So players is not an issue for us, but surely we have to ask ourselves internally. I mean, like, why is it that we lose players, but like we're still struggling, and we're going on tours and we're still struggling. We're losing by big margins. I understand if the Sharks, for example, lose to a Leinster first team. That's one of the best sides in Europe. But when those guys have rested the Johnny Sextons and things like that, and we still can't get those wins. But for me, with the exodus, I think what's hurting us the most is, obviously, we will lose some of the top players that will go, the Pollards, the Colbys. That's one thing. It's that second tier players, the guys who are just missing out on the Springbok frame. That's the guys I think we're missing in our games. The likes of Andre Estes, and it would have been great if we're still here in South Africa. It would have been great if Tyron Green was still in South Africa. We know, yes, they are improving, but I think that it just makes our local sides slightly bit stronger. And I think that's what's hurting the local sides, is that sort of player we're losing. We guys are on the fringe of making the box and things don't go as well. Then obviously the Rand can't fight, then someone leaves. Look at the Sharks. They're still struggling to replace Andre Estes, and they still have a centre crisis. Now, even look, Kanyama has gone to 12, but I just wish we could just try and cut out losing that second tier. The guys are just there, that they're on the fringe of being for the box, and if we keep those, our size will get stronger, because at the moment it just feels like we're constantly rebuilding.
Because you're so right. But you've hit the nail on the head there. And that's the thing. Sorry to interrupt. Sorry,
no,
I saw your hands up. But I think you're so right there, because the thing is, these guys, you know, Esther Hazen, like Tyron Green now, not being funny, Cooks, he would have arrived as a Lions. He came out, you know, there wasn't an uproar when he left the Lions, you know?
100%.
And he's gone on, and I promise you, he'll be writing his own checks up here. And if the Bucks don't want him, then England are going to take him. And you've hit the nail on probably the biggest improvement is guys like Faf de Klerk. Faf de Klerk was an inconsistent number 9 down in South Africa. Good number 9 on his day, was as good as anyone else. But he would go from, like, he would either be an 8 out of 10 to a 4 out of 10. Now he's like usually a 7.5 out of 10, but he can get up to a 9 out of 10. You know what I mean? And that's coaching. And the challenge is that guys like Esterhazen, I mean, Esterhazen will be on big money here, because, you know, now everybody's talking about him being in the Premiership Team of the Year. You know, the next thing is France. Somebody in France is going to want him, or someone in Ireland is going to want him as their kind of marquee player. So I think that's the challenge, is that I think we're the makers of our own downfall from a South African point of view, because our second-tier players are exceptional and they just need an opportunity.
Oh, definitely. I think so.
I'm going to jump in here. I look at this differently. We are not going to be able to hold on to our second string players. We can't. If you look at what Russi came out with a while ago, and how many pro teams we're going to have, and how many pro players, and all that sort of stuff. Essentially, what he was doing was saying, "Listen, guys, we can't afford to do this. This is not a sustainable practice here. So we are going to run out of more money. So we can't. So what we've done now is he said, "Cool, I'm gonna say that we can't do it because we can't and I can't afford it." But what he's done, which I think is the most important thing, is we've embraced the fact that we are going to lose players. So it is not a bad thing that we lose someone like Nyakane, because everyone's like in the past, like, "Oh, he's gone. Like, how can he do it?" Like, remember when Andries Bekker left for Japan? We all shat in our pants. We're like, "Oh my word, what are we going to do? The guy's leaving at the best time of his career. Jacques Ferry's another one." We're like, "Shit, man, we can get another 5 years out of this guy." And the guys just couldn't do it. So now there's the ability to move. But the thing is the most important thing is you need to keep that communication. So we're embracing it. Cool. The second string guys can go. Okay, we will keep as much. We keep as much of our South African Springboks here and the up and coming guys. And unfortunately, you know, there are going to be guys that lose out. But the likes of Tyron Green, you can say you go there. But I've got my eye on you. We are keeping an eye. We're in communication on a monthly basis. We sorted that out. Jasper Visser got his book call up. You know, the first player to be capped by the Springboks on their first cap, so make his debut, and that was based overseas, was Steven Kitsoff. But he had already signed for the Stormers. So he was finishing up his time at Bordeaux, and then they pulled him back. So he was the very first player, and that wasn't very long ago. Now we've made a few guys, Renard Alstadt, Joe Dweber, Visser. You know, we're starting to get to that point where a guy goes overseas, like Scott Spedding, like Rory Cockett, and they know they go overseas and they're like, "Cool, my Springbok dreams are gone." But fortunately, they got to play for France. But there are guys that go over there that just lose out. They just get lost. But now the conversation is there. So we can keep their Springbok fire alive, and they can get the best of both worlds. And it doesn't cost us money, because they're getting great coaching. They're getting they're having the communication. Everything's still open. It's really, for me, it's all relative. Like, how do you look at it, and how do you want to approach it? Do you want to treat them like the ugly stepchild, or are we going to treat them like assets? Like, "Listen here, you go there and you show me what you can be, and then we'll talk. You can become a Springbok, and then you can stay there and earn double."
And you know, Sean, you're sorry to jump in there again, and you're quite right. I think, you know, I think we've seen guys like, you know, Pierre Schoemans and Kyle Staines, and Cooks is right. Those guys leaving have definitely deteriorated the depth in South African rugby, and I get that's 100%. But in fairness, when, you know, if we're all realistic, and this is not a slant on them at all, because they are very, very good rugby players, but they are not good enough to be in the Springbok side at the moment. You know, those guys, with all due respect to Pierre Schoeman, he got his ass handed to him in that Scotland South Africa test. He's not good enough for the box. When you look at our bomb squad, you know, he would be, he was never going to wear green and gold. And I mean that with all due respect in the nicest possible way. But the fact of the matter is that it has the challenges there is that it has slightly weakened the domestic South African domestic scene. But the fact of the matter is, I don't know what he'll be on, but he'll be on a good wedge of money up here. And you know, he's only got, you know, he's probably got, you know, let's say a 10, 12 year career if he's lucky, and he's going to have to make as much cash as he can. And we as South Africa are going to lose players along the way. But we're actually going to, like you say, guys like Tyron Green, I promise you, he's got Springbok written all over him. And that's because he's proving himself at probably, if not the top league in the world, one of the top leagues in the world.
Thanks so much, Graham. And thanks so much for, I think, all of that, like, interesting input and contribution to that conversation as well. I think just the one quick point I'll make is I think the Bulls have struck gold in being able to get someone like Gert Small back to coach their Currie Cup team. So you're getting quality coaches on at all levels trying to improve the players. And that's, I think, is what's needed. And, you know, I think the Sharks are trying to sort of get that going. They have like a great like team of assistant coaches around Sean Everett now, with peeps like Neil Powell coming into the team. The Lions seem to have like got, you know, poached in some sense, some of the coaches from the Grecquas. But and getting someone like Jacques Ferry into the team as well, and they're starting to improve. The Stormers, yeah, we'll have to wait for them. But, you know, I think, as Graham has mentioned, if the coaching improves, I think it'll improve, I think, the game all around, at least locally, because we'll never not lose players. It's not just about keeping that standard of domestic rugby strong. I think we will just move on to other speakers. Oh, okay, that's... I think we've just lost one, but I see Raul wants to come in here. Raul?
Hey, I just thanks for letting me talk. I think to Sean's point, we've seen this work with football, cricket to an extent, and maybe even basketball, if you think about it, where the tier one nations take these players, train them up, spend the money, and then they go back to their national team. And I think if we can get to some aspect of football, at least take the good parts of football and not the bad parts, it's a way that we win-win. And it kind of also encourages managers and coaching South Africa to make more money on big transfers, and then maybe they start, you know, improving themselves. I think we got to be a bit realistic with ourselves that South Africa financially doesn't have the firepower, but we'll just siphon from the tier one countries until we're ready. That's it. Thanks.
No, I love that point. And I think that 5 million rand transfer fee was, I hope it's the start. And I think it should probably get closer to, you know, I think if a European team wants a Springbok, they should be paying something closer to 5 million euros than 5 million rand. But it will slowly but surely get up there. And if that is able to, you know, help improve our game, then that's fantastic.
But Taylor, quickly, The real question we're asking you is it what's the most impressive thing about the transfer? Is it Trevor getting five? Is the Bulls getting 5 million for Trevor, or is it Trevor playing with Finn Russell week in, week out?
It was a matter of time. Listen, Finn Russell's under a massive amount of pressure now because he's now officially not the most skillful player at Russing anymore.
Wow!
Wow, Sean! Wow! Wow!
We'll have to take this to HR because that was offensive.
I think Sean, it's really getting excited. I'm putting a video out this week because of this. I'm going full on Russigate here.
60-minute video coming up on the Rugby Bits page. But yeah, it'll be very interesting to see Trevor Nyakang in the midfield with Fakatawa and Gelfiku quite soon. Adrian. You wanted to come speak as well.
Yeah, my turn now, thanks. Just two things. Cooks, you mentioned about Currie Cup being played early next year. I know there's also going to be the under-21 Currie Cup being played early in the year. There's talk of under-21 sort of competition overlapping that. And then you've also got Varsity Cup. I mean, do we have enough? Because, you know, unions can only sign a number of junior contracts. Obviously, every year. Are there going to be enough players to go around? Because if you're saying that your top Springboks are over abroad, a lot of them, your second tier also moving overseas, you've obviously got URC squads to fill, plus then the rest playing Varsity Cup potentially, under-20 competition, which will be a lot of the guys who have actually played this last competition that it completed in early November or later part of October, and then the under-21 competition. So it'll be interesting to see how that all pans out in terms of, you know, is there enough resource for these guys? You know, it's great that they're going to get a chance, but it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And then secondly, just on the coaching side, I think Graham made a really good point. You know, we've got four teams in the URC, and... You know, I think Sean Everett, you know, he has, I think he will come good. I think there's been question marks in the past, but I think he will come good. I think Van Rooyen's had his critics, as you said. obviously Dobson, and then Jake White. I think Jake White is going to find it tough, you know, moving forward. I just think he's going to be found out in a way. I don't want to be mean or anything. I think he's going to be found. But, you know, on that, I'd like to see some of the junior coaches get given a chance when these guys eventually move on. If you look at the Lions under 20 coaches and their junior coaching staff from under 19 and 21, same as with Western Province, I think those guys can add so much value because they've been working with young guys. I think they should really be given a chance when the senior coaches for the current URC sites are moving on to greener pastures or retire. I just feel, you know, that those are the kind of coaches, you know, they work a lot of skill. You can just see it. You can see where the guys when they're playing for the under 21 teams. I think those are the guys we need to put our faith in moving forward. So that's all really what I wanted to add, just on elaborate on some of the points you've discussed tonight.
Yeah, and I think thanks so much, Adrian. I think you raise a good point about sort of a pathway for coaches as well. And hopefully you have a situation where coaches, are getting put into positions where they are put in a position where they can succeed, you know, either they start as assistants and then become head coaches in these franchises, or they are head coaches and they are supported by strong assistant coaches. And, you know, that's where I was a little bit disappointed with the Lions. But it seems like it kind of worked out for them with someone like Mzee Nkosi that went now to coach the under-21s. So that's good for him, or good for the under-21s especially. I mean, they won the series now last month. But also, does that, you know, when is his chance going to come to, you know, be involved at the top level of rugby when, you know, to an extent, peeps like Albert van der Bach and Jacques Fourie have now sort of usurped him now in that order. So he needs to, you know, have that opportunity, and he needs to be someone that is hopefully looked at by in the next line. So, yeah, I think that was a really good point made there.
I think I just want to add one more thing. I think a lot of the time coaches in South Africa, they take the easy option and go and become directors of rugby at prominent high schools. Firstly, because it's safety and the salaries are really good. But, you know, it's not as risk averse as coaching a South African team. You just don't know what's going to happen long term. I know you need to do that to earn your stripes, but it is easier to go to a high school, whether private or government or Model C, whatever, and get a good position there. Because if you just look around at the high school, there's some really good coaches, and you've got to ask yourself, why aren't they trying to get into the unions? Or maybe they've been at the unions, just hasn't worked out. But I think they do look at in terms of it's a safety first option in terms of what job they can get. And I think it's fair enough, you know, in South Africa. So I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, it actually kind of reminds me of what happens in NFL as well. So the coaches, some of the great coaches are coaching in the university or college level. And that is because of the job security. And that is because of sort of the less expectations and the very good pay that you get there. And I think it's a similar thing with, you know, the high schools versus some of our professional teams, that you almost only want to go step straight into sort of professional rugby if you know you're going to be like a head coach or a high-ranking assistant. And, you know, that's another coach now that the Lions, you know, didn't make sort of the new Lions coaching staff. If I'm not mistaken, Sean Erasmus is now not part of the Lions, or I don't know if he's going to another team. But yeah,
I think he's going back to Paul Boys High. That's what I heard last, but it's not been confirmed.
So that's a great example. Like, he's done almost everything that you want a coach to do in the school level, and he's been dominant, you know, in KZN with Benwood and in the Western Cape with Paul as well. And, you know, he coaches now in a franchise, and, you know, doesn't get the opportunities necessarily to go up to that next level. So and I think that story or that situation might, you know, discourage other coaches from making that step up. And that's something we have to look out for, I think, in future. Sure. Cooks, I thought I saw your hand. I don't know if you wanted to also add to that.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I wanted to add on to Adrian's first point quickly about players. Yeah, like I said, like Adrian, you are spot on. Our players are going to be stretched to its utmost limit because, like you said, it's Varsity Cup. it's URC, this Currie Cup. And I think the biggest loser of us joining the URC is the Currie Cup, because, I mean, those stages when the Cheetos were playing, well, the Bulls were to play, the under 21 players playing in the Currie Cup, and it's sort of in the Currie Cup now has just become it's sort of fallen away, and I think it's lost its luster, which is really sad for such a prominent competition. And such, I mean, we could all sit here and speak about amazing Currie Cup stories when it was almost the best competition we had, and now it's almost turned into a bit of a competition where youngsters are played and teams aren't taking it as seriously. So, yeah, I think we are going to be stretched. I do hope in the Varsity Cup, though. I think it might work better for the Varsity Cup. I do believe that it gives a chance for the students to go and jam, you know, because, I mean, the guys who don't make it into academies, that could be their second chance of playing, you know, of getting a contract, you know, because what's happened in the Varsity Cup is there's guys who are in academy contracts, but they're playing Varsity Cup. So technically, it's just basically we almost recycling the same players, where I hope next year's Varsity Cup allows us to, you know, find the guys who couldn't get into academy. That's their second chance of playing in a varsity tournament. And then hopefully we can find a few gems from there. And so I think that's the bonus of it. I mean, back in the day, we had the likes of Andre Pollard playing Varsity Cup, but he spent more time at Dukes than I did. And I stayed in PE, so which was a bit of a mess. So now at least actual varsity students are going to get a chance. They're gonna get a chance to showcase their talent in. And I do think Varsity Cup is another competition in a way for us to breed these young coaches and for them to get. I just think for those coaches that there has to be a pathway because, I mean, like at the moment, I don't know what the coaching structure is like. Or someone like Jonathan Mukwena, who's won the Varsity Cup so often, but he still struggles to get but he can't make the next step up to a professional job, and then some guys are retiring and going straight into assistant jobs at Super Rugby sides, and you're thinking, like, what is going on here? And I think that's the big thing that we really trust with our coaching, and hopefully we can get that pathway right. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, we lost the likes of John Pumtree, and they went to coach international sides. And now you sort of look back at our coaches now, is how many of our coaches, current coaches now, would go coach international side? Who would? And I think that's what we need to fix. I mean, I would love look at someone like John Mitchell. He spends enough time in South Africa to go and mentor some of the young coaches. Maybe get him as a director of rugby somewhere, as opposed to, because, I mean, there is comfort in schools. I mean, like someone like Sean Erasmus, he gets to go back to Paul Boys, where he almost has a blank check, and, you know, he's almost got leeway to coach wherever you want. And if he can't get a professional job somewhere after going 3 years without losing a game, then it tends to wonder, like, who can make it from schools into professional coaching.
Yeah, sometimes I feel it's jobs for the boys in South African coaching. You know, it's who you know, etc. And it's not right, but it happens in, you know, all walks of life. But I've noticed that in SA. But yeah, that's it pretty much what I wanted to add.
Thanks so much, Adrian. And thanks to everyone that came and jumped in. And apologies, I think there are some people that, I don't know, jumped off or weren't able to join in the conversation. Apologies for that. It just sometimes you have to just let the conversation flow. And I hope that you know, if we have this conversation again, that those points can also come up as well. Just to end off on a bit of a lighter note, it seems like something that was mentioned also by Ian McGeeken was the possibility of South Africa joining the Six Nations and being a part of that. So we're just having a bit of a debate on the WhatsApp group about which team between England or South Africa will be the most hated in the Six Nations. Cooks, what do you reckon? Do you think we'll be hated more than England, or will England still be the number one team to beat?
Well, it all depends if Russia's ban is will be lifted by the time we get into the Six Nations. If the ban is still on, it will definitely still be the most hated, especially Sir Clive Woodward is leading the charge. And we saw what Rusty was doing to his poor English bulldog. So Rusty's trying very hard to make sure that we were a lot more hated than the English side.
I think they'll probably make us have to play our games in Italy or something like that, just as punishment. Sean, and then just with regards to... you know, just as a final point, you know, I saw someone tweet, you know, Rassie was also just retweeting that idea. I saw someone tweet that South Africa should stay in the Rugby Championship and play the Six Nations. Is that even possible?
Whoa, I didn't see that. That sounds amazing. I mean, imagine winning the World Cup year in and year out and then going to win it at the World Cup. I mean, that would really, like, that would totally put us on the most hated. But sure. Listen, you can totally make it happen. It would be, we would see less of our international, our books playing. It'll actually be quite interesting because for our overseas Springboks, we can't manage their sort of playing time and rest time and stuff as much as we can in South Africa. But it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm talking about this as if it's a reality because I think it can be done. I mean, there's no reason why it can't. Like from a calendar point of view and all that, but that would be next level. Imagine we could do that. Maybe just 1 year we do a double up on a changeover and just absolutely rock the boat. But then everyone will hate us more. World Rugby will never allow it. That's favoritism, and that favoritism only goes to other countries. England.
Yeah, I don't know, and probably. The teams playing for like 12 months throughout the year, or the players playing for 12 months throughout the year might also protest at some point. But yeah, I think that will end it here for our space. Thank you so much to everyone that joined. Thank you so much to people like Rolane, Adrian, Graham, Raul, and others that joined in to speak as well and to share their views. And Cooks and Sean, thank you so much. Unfortunately, not necessarily as much rugby from the local, from the domestic scene to look forward to, but there is a lot of great European rugby to look forward to now with the European Championship Cup and the Challenge Cup also happening this weekend. So I think there'll be a lot of Safers Abroad performances that we can speak about as well. So keep your eyes out on RugbyBits website and our social media channels just to see what the content that we have there as well. Thank you, everyone. And yeah, have a good evening.
Cheers, everyone. Tyler, thank you. Kutle, and for all other guests, what a great shot.
Cheers, everyone. It's always a pleasure. Cheers, guys.